This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, everybody, welcome to a, dare I say, special edition of the Overreaction Monday podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, joined by Anwar Richardson. We, for those of you who've never listened to this podcast, every Monday we do a podcast where we overreact to the things that Tom Herman says at his Monday press conference. We didn't have one a week ago because there wasn't a press conference. We had one 2 weeks ago, and my memory of it is fuzzy because it wasn't incredibly memorable. Mr. Richardson, that's not the case today. Today, the press conference is incredibly memorable. I feel like I will remember it for as long as I'm covering Texas football moving forward. I'll always remember that this press conference occurred. Hoo boy, you fired off quite the scud missile in terms of a question for Coach Herman, and it changed the narrative for which the entire press conference will be remembered for. Your initial thoughts at what was absolutely a game-changing question. I think in the narration of the entire season, this was a fascinating set of on-the-record comments coming from Tom Herman.
Yeah, it was, you know, I wasn't quite sure, Ketch, how it was going to occur, right? I wasn't quite sure what was going to occur. I just knew that the question needed to be asked, right? And so the setup in my thought process, and I'll get to the reaction. I was thinking, Ketch, I was like, you know, why are we as reporters talking and writing about the elephant in the room, but not addressing the elephant in the room? Why are we not asking Tom Herman the point blank question that everybody knows is out there, right? And I was like, I thought to myself, okay, there's no way on this Monday, I'm going to ask him about Jordan Whittington and will he be back this upcoming weekend? Give me a Keandre Coburn report. You know, Kansas plays you guys really tough. Like, that stuff is fine, right? But the crux of the situation is, the thing that cannot be ignored is that with three games left in the regular season, there's a possibility that the head football coach at the University of Texas, one of the biggest programs in the country, they make more money than any other program, athletic program in the country, that head coach might be fired. And you know what? Somebody's got to ask this guy about it. And so I had to ask him, Ketch. You listen, the two things, what are you saying to players? What are you saying to recruits? And are you concerned at all? And there's many layers to it, Ketch. So I'll give you my general before we get into specifics. But what was interesting was, it's funny, you and I, you sent me a message, and I think it was like 2 minutes into Herman's answer. You're like, yeah, man, this guy's probably been dying for someone to ask him that. I don't know if he was, but you can tell this thing has been on his mind for a while. Like, you can tell that he has been thinking about it. You can tell he's heard it, because everyone always talks about they don't hear it, right? They don't hear what the outside noise. He'll never know what's going on, anything like that. He's heard it. I specifically, Ketch, said the word Urban Meyer. I didn't want to say, I don't want to be vague. I didn't want to say, you know, we hear, you know, you might be lose your job. Like, you might lose your job to Urban Meyer. And then he laughed, you know, as soon as I said that, right? So I thought it was fascinating. If there's a game of chess that's going on between Tom Herman and Chris Del Conte, I don't know how chess is played, and I can't tell you what each one does, but boy, did he move his pieces in the right direction to basically say that they're cool and he's got an endorsement from him and that Del Conte is willing to talk to recruits? I mean, man, there's so much to this. There's so much to it. There's so much to unpack. I'm glad I asked it. Definitely glad I asked it.
You know, honestly, again, to me, you wouldn't have known it. He could have answered that in a million ways, then it wouldn't have been a big deal. I mean, he could have blown you off. We've seen Tom do this before. just blow off, you know, just blow you off. I don't think about it and move on. That's not what he did. I'm going to repeat a couple of things that you specifically said, because I 1000% agree with you. There's a lot to unpack. So forgive us as you listen to this podcast when we don't focus on anything else that happened in the press conference today.
There's nothing else to talk about.
No, there were a couple. Jordan Whittington is back, and he said Tyler Johnson's name. And they're actually, if we didn't have this on war, I feel perfectly, it'd have been boring. I mean, but we'd have had some like football things to talk about. There may not be any 12 personnel this week. Right. So like, as I was watching the press conference, there were things that happened and I thought, oh, that's a little mental note. Like I started thinking to myself, ooh, this Kansas game is starting to feel like one that could play closer. Like as he was talking before any of this other stuff started happening, I was like, oh, he didn't have any tight ends, huh? Interesting. And I just, you know, then your question was asked and it just changed everything. And there is a lot to unpack. And oh, by the way, Brian Davis sneaking in at the gun to ask some really pertinent follow-up questions. I actually want to thank Brian Davis because, and I don't mean to call out Cedric Golden on this deal. I only bring it up because it was a rare moment of levity in the press conference where when you were done asking the question and he was done giving your answer or his answer, Ced was next and was like, oh, I'm going to follow that up. Like it was actually quite funny, but there was like 10 questions that followed.
That's when you pull the freaking, you know, audible, you know,
yes.
That's what Brian Davis was like, I got to get back on. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No. And so I give Brian credit for jumping in, because anybody that asked a question like Chip, I don't mean to call out Chip, but Chip heard all that after everything that he's written and was like, can you confirm who is going to be the official snapper on Saturday? Like it was a weak ass question. And like, not when you're like one of the last questions to ask. So I give Brian credit. This is what we do. This weirdly turns into a rate the media assignment because we talk about the press conference. And I don't care. It happened. It was a weak question. Brian Davis jumps in at the death, asks multiple follow-up questions that I think were really important to continued framing of what it is that Tom said today. But I think you also hit – so I want to throw all of that out there, but I also want to say the most important thing that came out of this, among all the things to unpack, is that Tom Herman gave himself the first vote of confidence via proxy of his boss. So what Tom did today was the thing that we've all been like, man, Chris Del Conte ain't really got much to say about football. And this is where Brian Davis deserves a lot of credit. He was like, yo, I've asked your boss about you and your football program, and he don't ever want to talk about it, ever. And you just told us that he's like there to support us. So about that disconnect, does it bother you? And Tom was like, oh, no, it doesn't bother me because I know the truth. Really, is I've never heard a coach. The dreaded vote of confidence thing on war is notorious because it comes from the boss, usually right before someone gets fired.
Yes.
I've never heard a coach say, I talked to my boss.
And he's like, hey, my boss says he'll talk to recruits for me to let me know and let those recruits know I'm good.
I don't know whether that's true or not, but I know that it did. What today accomplished was, A, Tom Herman threw it out into the stratosphere that he has a vote of confidence that his boss, it's the one thing that, as Tom talked about, things that have been reported about his football program that aren't true. He never specifically came out today and he just alluded to like vague things without coming out and saying this has been reported. It specifically is hurting recruiting and it's incorrect. Like, he didn't do that at all. And I was waiting for it. I was like, Tom, say it. Say what you think is completely bullshit. Say it. Quit hinting about it. Say it. And Herman never said it. But indirectly, the only specific thing that it would appear that he is alleging is completely untrue is the idea that there's a disconnect between him and Chris Del Conte. Because, according to Herman, Del Conte and their mutual conversations back and forth is like, hey, man, you need me to fly to Tulsa? Hey, man, you need me to get on the phone? He's doing – he. Tom Herman described his boss as willing to do the dance for him today. And that is not what is being said. It is not what Chris Del Conte has been reflecting. It is, to me, the headline from today. Of all the stuff on WAR, we have to unpack, including his Orange fans comment and the idea that, like, unnamed sources are reporting. I don't know it. I don't know, honestly, on WAR at times, I didn't know specifically what he was talking about because he said the Orange fans thing, and I know he has to hate Orange Bloods, but in terms of reporting actual stories, like, I don't know specifically what it is that we have reported that he would say out loud is untrue, except we have reported that things have not been rosy behind the scenes between him and Del Conte. And although he didn't say those reports are untrue, everything else he painted about that picture would suggest my boss and I have an awesome relationship.
Great. I mean, great, great relationship. And you know what? If they don't, that what Tom Herman did today was brilliant. I mean, but because what, see, you know, one thing, you know, Tom could have done the no comment, right? And, you and I know in this business, sometimes no comment speaks louder than the comment itself, right? Hey, did you molest those girls? No comment. Whoa,
yes.
whoa. Okay, that's something you come out and you would stand on a table and say no. And so he didn't go to the no comment route and he didn't blow it off. But he went out of his way to make it seem like, hey, all this stuff that you guys are putting out, I know the truth. We're good. That's my dude. Like, that's not it. He could have just said, look, we have a good relationship, professional relationship. He basically said the stuff that's put out there about their lack of relationship or the lack of support on Twitter, which might have been a shot at Jeff Ketchum, but the lack of support that he receives on Twitter. Because look, Chris Del Conte has not acknowledged a win, like, over the last three wins. And
he hasn't directly acknowledged the football team publicly.
On social media
since the game against Texas Tech. So you literally have to go back two full months to find a public acknowledgement of the football team via social media that doesn't include a link to him trying to whore out his content, right? So he's got his athletic director email that he writes that he's got to throw a link out to. And he has to write about the football team in that. But like twice last week, the volleyball team won games. One, they won a Big 12 championship. The other one, they just won. And after both nights, he commented, A, to tell them congrats, and then in a separate tweet the next night to tell them to be safe coming home. When the Texas football team has been on the road, Chris Del Conte ain't been telling them to be safe coming home via social media. Like, and Tom can say, and that was absolutely because I'm the one that originally pointed out Tweetgate. So that probably was a specific call out of me. I can live with that. But like, it speaks for itself. Like, he can say, oh, we don't count the tweets of things that are written by 50-year-old. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. You know, Tom knows. I don't care how Tom answered that question. Tom knows that his boss ain't publicly supporting him. Now, what's fascinating, like you said, Anwar, is that he, though, paints a picture. So what he couldn't say is, Oh, that's crazy. Yes, he doesn't support. You know what I mean? Like he almost didn't acknowledge that the public support thing doesn't exist. He's saying it does exist behind the scenes. I think it puts a lot of pressure on Del Conte to Del Conte will have requests this week from people to go on the, okay. Would you like to respond to the comments that Tom Herman made this week about the public, the support behind the scenes that you've given him, which includes calling recruits and specifically speaking to them about Herman's job security? Care to comment on that? If this were chess, because I've been watching the Queen's Gambit, it doesn't feel like checkmate, but it feels like a very aggressive move with like one of the pieces on the board. I don't know if it's check, but it feels like one of those moves where that if you were watching it, you'd go like, that's what today was. There was an aggressive move on the chessboard. And the eyes do turn to Chris Del Conte now, because he has not publicly commented on his football coach all season. It is unprecedented. The lack of, I mean, typically Anwar, you know this, you've covered multiple athletic directors at this point. You can usually grab an athletic director after a game and be like, hey, can we get you to answer like 5 questions? And then before you're done, like all the media surround, because athletic directors talk. They talk. Del Conte talks. Just not this year.
Well, it's harder this year because of the COVID stuff. And, you know, we have to be in the press box. And we can't leave and go out of it. But what was fascinating about
Has he Zoomed once with the media during the football season?
No.
See?
But what's fascinating, though, to your point, what's fascinating is Brian Davis, I think he slipped up a little bit. But it was intentional, and it's fine. But Brian Davis said, look, I try to talk to your boss all the time, and he doesn't want to talk about it. And so, you know, Brian's never reported that he's trying to make attempts to, and we're nitpicking, right? These are just technical
reports. That's an interesting observation. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, if you go back to it, look through your notes, he said, I tried to talk to him multiple times, and he doesn't want to talk about the program. And I thought, well, Brian's never reported that he's tried to do that. So basically, Brian was talking about his personal conversations that he's tried to have and maybe try to get him on the record, whatever that case may be. But whatever the conversations that he's having with Del Conte. And he's like, nah, he doesn't want to talk about it. And so, which is interesting. So for so many levels, but then Tom is like, no, we are good. And that, to your point, it puts the ball back in Del Conte's court, because now Chris wants to do something or make a move. It's got to be under the guise of, well, we were cool. I thought you guys were cool. You were just calling recruits just a couple of weeks ago or being willing to get on the phone to say this guy is good, and now he's not? What is the message there? And look, listen, and this is what's interesting. Del Conte is getting calls today. He's getting calls today from some folks that who have talked to him. Maybe if they don't like Tom and Del Conte said something, and he's having to answer some phone calls today as to, hey, what's the plan after the season? What are you going to do? He's going to have to answer some things, but what's he going to say? Oh, Tom lied. I don't like him. I mean, you know, say like it is an interesting. If it's not a play, and let's just take Tom at his word. If it's no play, then fine. It was just a statement of fact. But the fact that he doesn't want to acknowledge this team on a social media platform, and the social media platform, I think, Ketch, is important to note. I'll throw it back to you after this. I think it's important when we say the social media platform is because Chris Del Conte writing a newsletter to his fans
that's just specific to the fans. And he doesn't, I mean, he'll mention a little bit about the football team, and then he kind of goes on. The social media component is essentially saying it to the world. It's saying it to TCU. It's saying it to Oklahoma. It's saying it to Michigan. It's saying it to USC. It's saying it to everybody out there. That's my guys. Not specific. That's like you, Ketch, showing love to your wife behind closed doors, but then you guys go out in public and you don't hold her hand. You know what I'm saying? You don't.
Absolutely.
You sit far away from her. You guys don't have a conversation during dinner, and you could come back and say no, but when we are at home, we are great. But all I'm seeing, Ketch, from the outside perspective, is I'm looking, and I'm like, you and your wife are sitting there at the dinner table, and you guys ain't talking. That's why the social media component, and that's why we keep hammering on, that's why it's so important, because it's not just about what goes on at home behind closed doors. It's about what happens in public. And from a public perspective, it seems to be like a rift of two people sitting at a dinner table, not talking to each other. But Tom is telling us what's going on behind closed doors.
I think it sets up Del Conte to potentially just look like a liar and a bad boss. And if Herman didn't accomplish nothing else today, if and when he gets the shank, he'll have created the narrative that it came out of nowhere, that the guy that did it to him was the guy that was willing to call his players and was, you know, because in order to take Herman at face value today, he was specifically asked about Urban Meyer. The answer that he gave would indicate that his boss is telling him, you don't have anything to worry about with Urban Meyer. That's nonsense. Let me know if you need me to call a recruit and tell him that. Right? Yeah. I mean, that's what happened today, right?
Yeah.
You specifically asked about Urban Meyer, and he specifically said, my boss has got my back and is willing to tell recruits that. So, specifically, you'd have to believe that behind the scenes, this Urban Meyer thing's not an elephant in the room that has been not addressed. If it ends up happening, I think today set the table for Del Conte to just look bad behind the scenes. And, you know, I'm reminded at the end of when Mac left in 2013, you know, part of his goal at the end was to make it as unattractive as possible for anybody else that would want the job. Like, he traveled for a week out of state to avoid coming home to a meeting that might make it possible for Texas to pursue Nick Saban. I mean, like, there's been some stuff going on historically. Hell, think of it like this. We won't go into politics, but Trump isn't exactly making things easy for Biden should there be a transition. I think that, you know, I think today Herman had a press conference where if there's an eventual transition, just behind the scenes, at least with his boss, it makes it uncomfortable. Doesn't make it easier. So on where do we go next? Right? We've specifically addressed Chris Del Conte element of this. Do we talk about recruiting?
Yes. Because he had a passionate speech about the recruiting. He focused on that recruiting aspect a lot. And I think it's significant, Ketch. And I'm gonna step back a little bit on this one. But Quinn Ewers did decommit as a five-star. Who was the guy that came right after Quinn about a week later? Who was the other guy that decommitted, Ketch? It was like a receiver or something like that.
The 2022 kid. Yep.
He decommitted. And look, I mean, some of the things I've heard behind the scenes is that the questions about Herman's future have been something that recruits are talking about. And it's been a little bit of a battle as to what might may or may not happen. And I think it's going to be really interesting, Ketch. And again, I just want to set it up and I'll walk away because the 2021 class hasn't done well. And if Herman stays around, and he's somewhat of a, he has to prove it in this upcoming year, the 2021 year, well, then that affects 2022. Because now you're talking about what, waiting until October or November of next year to determine what happens. So these decisions are going to be made in the springtime, in the summertime, and before the season, and the majority of them will be. So the recruiting aspect of the Urban rumors was something that he was very passionate about, the unnamed sources, talking about players, showing him like stuff on their cell phones. It seems to be something that he doesn't like and feels like it's screwing them over in some capacity.
Well, this now becomes, if I were his boss, he wouldn't get away with that shit. Not that some of it isn't true. It's just a more advanced conversation than to say our recruiting is struggling because of rumors on the internet. You know, the reality of Tom Herman, and you know, if we're being completely honest, and what was so fascinating about the specific questions about the impact of recruiting is I think it's the recruiting component of this that has him behind the eight ball as much as anything, which is why he may have been so willing to be vocal and like talk about it. Even if Tom Herman didn't give an accurate portrayal of the current state of recruiting in the state of Texas, because the reality is Tom Herman didn't enter this season with job security issues. In fact, the thinking was his buyout is so big, he's untouchable. I mean, they wouldn't get rid of Shaka. They're not getting rid of Herman. That's how this season started. But recruiting in 2021 was already in the pooper before the season started. Had nothing to do with recruiting rumors. It had everything to do with the fact that the top prospects in the state watched last season, saw it go off the rails, saw Herman have to fire 70% of his staff, and they all put their foot on the brake for essentially 13 months, and not a single big-time prospect in the 2021 class for 13 months pulled the trigger on Texas, because they've all wanted to wait and see what this, they just stopped believing Herman's bullshit, right? We're building a championship team. No, you're building a champ. You're building a team that fires 70% of its staff. Like, that's where the rubber met the road in the offseason. And we did a million podcasts talking about how he had to thread the needle and put, you remember, I personally described it as Luke trying to blow up the Death Star, that he needed COVID to work for him. He needed the players to be patient. Then he needed to win all the games. And it needed, you know, I try to describe it, and I was like, man, this is unlikely to happen. It didn't happen. However, I don't know that the 2022 recruiting class is one that was as impacted by all of that stuff as the 2021 class. The 2022 class, Texas has been in pretty good early position with. But those kids, like the 2021 kids, have been waiting, although Quinn Ewers didn't, but only because Oklahoma got a commitment from another kid, and that forced Ewers in his mind that he needed to make an early decision. Like, there's some weird dynamics involved here. Herman's not wrong that the Urban Meyer stuff really is a death blow for recruiting. He's not wrong when he says that other coaches can just print out what's being written on Orange Bloods, Orange Fans, wherever kids go to, and we know he's talking about Orange Bloods, when it's like we're reading the internet and reading what's being said. He's not wrong about that. But this isn't a chicken or the egg situation. This isn't one of these deals where it's like the recruiting only went sideways once the rumors started. No, that's not what happened. Recruiting has been in neutral for about 15 months now. And the only thing that changed that was the Quinn Ewers commitment. It's the only thing in the last 15 months that would have happened that would, well, and I say that with all due respect, at the end they closed with Alfred Collins and a few other guys. I'm specifically thinking, though, about 2021 kids and not 2020 kids. They haven't had any momentum in 2021, 2022 in 15 months, except for Quinn Ewers. And then as soon as he peeled off, it was like taking the robe off of the Wizard of Oz and seeing him naked for everything that he is, because it revealed, oh yeah, there's nothing else here other than Ewers. That's what made that kid's commitment so important. When it happened, it was like, oh, maybe they do have some recruiting momentum that doesn't involve Brock or Meyer brothers or Kamar Wheaton or any number of kids. You know, I mean, Billy Bowman decommitting, that happened. Like, there's been this run of lack of momentum. Herman today tried to blame it all on the internet and rumors. It's completely misguided. It's completely inaccurate. Even if he's right that it is happening now, it's just not the first thing that happened. It's the cherry on top of the shit Sunday that he has right now in recruiting. And I think the big problem is the elephant in the room as it relates to that is, once that's happened, it's very hard to overturn it. And it's the only thing that Herman, I suppose, wasn't asked was, well, if all that's happening, how do you turn that around? If yours is decommitting and kids are reading about Urban Meyer and your job security is at a point where athletic directors are having to come in into phone calls and vouch for you, how do you turn that around? Because the history of college football and coaching changes is that once you reach that point, you've reached the point of no return. And I felt like those were a couple of the questions that, if people hadn't been wasting their time asking about non-consequential things, getting him on the record with that would have been interesting. Because to me, there was a confession of sorts today, Anwar, that what's happening makes his position as coach at Texas kind of untenable. Like, how do you stay if in recruiting you don't have any control over narratives?
I mean, it's a fascinating question, Ketch. I mean, it really is, because the question becomes, like you said, what do you control as the coach, right? That becomes the question. Okay, you're always going to have negative recruiting of some sorts, right? I mean, there's not a program that you can't negatively recruit against. I mean, if you are, or if your kid may be thinking about going to Oklahoma, you say, well, will you even play? I mean, I can negatively recruit against a quarterback going there. I'm like, dude, you know how many five stars they bring in every year? What's your chances of actually ever playing there? Ah, you know what city you got to live in. You could say something. But the fact that the issue that he has is that if it ultimately comes down to wins or putting guys in the league, if that becomes the true barometer, well, then that's the tough part. Cause you don't have, if you're going to say you don't have the wins, you don't have a ton of people that are being put in the NFL. He talked about the juniors that came out and early. I mean, it did have Duvernay as a third round pick. It had Colin Johnson last year, where I think it was a fifth round pick. Maybe their highest was Connor Williams as a second rounder, and he played like four games that year. And so if you can't really point to NFL, and if you can't point to conference championships, and now what you're saying is, hey, well, the real issue is this. I think it predates the Urban stuff. So if you want to be 100% honest, if you want to tell me where I think things really, really took the South blow, I think it's with the Brockermeyers. I think, more so than Quinn Ewers, I think before the season, when the Brockermeyers decided that they were going to go to Bama, I think that was the thing. That was the, hey, the legacy. Like, you have a grandfather that played there, a father that played there. You had two parents that went to the university. You have a brother who's currently on the team, and you decided you didn't want to sign up for that. That was after missing out on some other people prior too, but you figure if you get the Brockermeyers, you're good to go. And then I think the Brockermeyers deciding to go elsewhere,
I think that was the death blow as far as recruiting is concerned. And I think that's where it's at right now. You lose Jalen Moreau. And that definitely was a thing that you can't afford to lose quarterbacks. But for me, I think it predates Urban. If we're just being honest, I think it starts with the Brockmeyers.
Well, of course. Right. I mean, I just think that, you know, the problem Texas always was going to have was that this 2021 class has been DOA for more than 12 months. And that TCU game result and the aftermath of the eyes of Texas and everything, it's like, you know, there's a number of things that have occurred in the last 6 months that have only added gasoline to the problems that Herman has been firefighting with. I mean, and I don't say all of this and throw Herman under the bus and say it's all his fault. I mean, some of what's happened to Herman is really bad timing and, you know, some bad luck mixed in. But, you know, I don't give him a free – I talked about this in a podcast I did earlier today, and you and I think, are 100% agreement on this. Like, the seven coach thing, like, that doesn't give you a pass this year. That's your fault. Oh, I'm in year four and I had to hit a reset on the program. It was really unfortunate. Well, no, it is unfortunate, but like, because of bad decisions. Like, you know, there's bad decisions that created this situation that, oh, by the way, just unfortunately occurred during a pandemic. Like, you know, some of that he can't control, but some of that, you know, you wouldn't have to install all new schemes if you hadn't made bad hires and bad decisions before. I don't know. This again, I feel Herman because I understand what he's saying. It is impossible to recruit when the talk of your job security reaches the point that it has with Herman. But whose fault is that? I mean, he's like, he talks about the University of Texas and the internet as if it is unlike other places. And he's wrong. Go see Michigan right now. Go to a Michigan site. See what they're saying. And Jim Harbaugh's their guy. He's a legend. They are ready to run his ass out of town. You think that you don't think he's got some stuff he's dealing with in recruiting? You know, I mean, it starts with the failures on the field. And once that starts, it's hard to fake it after that. It's hard. And once upon a time, Mack Brown was in the exact same situation as Tom Herman is on War. You know the difference between the two?
What is it?
Mack Brown could recruit like a mother. And he had a staff full of guys that he could send into any room, any living room in the country, and they could sell the idea. It doesn't matter that Oklahoma just beat us 63-14. Close your eyes. UT football heaven. Put you in the NFL. It'll be heaven here. Like, Mack Brown understood a couple of things that Tom Herman doesn't. A, you recruit like a monster, it will cover up a bunch of sins. Because when Mack signed that number one rated 2002 recruiting class with Vince Young in it, he'd already lost back-to-back games to Oklahoma. Oklahoma had just won a national championship. Oklahoma had just beat them by 50 in 1 year, and in the next year, humiliated them with the Roy Williams Superman game where Texas only scored 3 points. It had a player in Chris Sims that was the number one player in the country, the most famous recruit maybe in the history of college football at the time of his arrival. And that dude failed, and it didn't matter because Mack Brown was such a good recruiter that it just didn't matter. Tom Herman is not that. And Tom Herman, when he built this staff that he currently has, he purposefully chose, because he viewed development as a bigger problem than anything else, to such a degree that he hired his staff and said, if these guys develop and we win, recruiting takes care of itself at the University of Texas. The problem is the world doesn't line up like that. The world doesn't line up evenly like that. Recruiting hasn't waited on his assistant coaches to prove that they can develop players. Tommy Brockermeyer and the Brockermeyer brothers, they didn't wait. A lot of guys aren't waiting. So what happens now is Tom really needs a staff of guys that can sell ketchup popsicles to a room full of men wearing white coats, and he doesn't have it. So now he's waiting for results to back up what he's selling in recruiting, but he doesn't have the salespeople to hold it off. That's on him. I mean, the recruiting, I'll just tell you right now, if Tim Brewster was on his staff, Quinn Ewers wouldn't have decommitted. But Tom doesn't have anybody that can talk that talk in a way that defeats the momentum that he has going against it. So Tom didn't hire a recruit, has never valued having badass recruiters on his staff. And Tom's never played the game in politics. So Tom's never found it valuable to be liked. Man, I asked a high-level university official this morning on WAR, who, ironically, before this Herman press conference, where Herman would indicate that one of the answers to this question is Chris Del Conte. I asked this high-level source, who is still Tom Herman's friend? And he couldn't give me a name of anyone. So when we look at this, where Herman is right now, the difference between him and Mac Brown at the same stages of their careers with the same problems is that Mac had everybody loved him, and he had the room loved Mac. And Mac was such a good recruiter that he could always promise the tomorrow ahead of the present. And Tom can't do that. And it's the reason why at the end of the season, Tom Herman likely is in a very bad place, because even if he gets another season, I don't know how, as you mentioned earlier, I don't know how you turn. We're right back in this spot potentially 9 months later. The only way this gets answered so that it doesn't become a problem next year, should he get another year, is if they give Herman an extension. No extension. No, this problem goes away and stays away for sure.
Wait, I missed something. Did you say the only way this problem goes away is by giving him an extension?
Yes. Right, because let me paint the picture.
Yeah.
Tom wins the Big 12 championship and keeps his job, right?
Yeah.
So he wins a championship. They can't fire him. Tom gets another year. But if they start next year 2-2, we're back where we started. We're back where we were right now. And we're doing it all over again. And suddenly 2022 recruiting falls apart, and now you're dealing with 2023. And suddenly you get to a point, it's only 2020, but on where the crazy thing about college football and the way recruiting works these days, that even though it's the 2020 season, we're about to start talking about recruiting classes that are going to be mostly impacting the 2025 and 2026 seasons. You feel me? Like,
yes,
this decision where they are right now is so problematic, because if they mess it up, I mean, it's almost like if they don't go, if Tom Herman either isn't great and we haven't seen it, or they don't go out and hire someone like Urban Meyer who can just turn water into wine with what's already on campus, you know, because the kids that will sign in the 2021 recruiting class, of which Texas is not doing really well in, those kids, other than the five stars, mostly are going to be impacting seasons that are 3 or 4 years away. So what's on campus is what Texas has right now is what it's going to have for the immediate future, for the first half of this decade. And I don't know how Texas answers how they turn things around quickly and address recruiting at the same time. It's really complicated. And I don't know how anything other than changing Herman, just because they have to, like, it's almost not Tom Herman's fault. They're just caught between a rock and a hard place as it relates to the clock. They don't get this thing turned around real fast. They're going to be chasing things for half a decade. And that's not me screaming fire in a crowded theater. That's me pointing out the reality of the high school seniors of today that make up the recruiting class of tomorrow typically don't start making wide range. I mean, Joseph Osai's finally turned into a difference maker, right, Anwar? Like, he's going to be a first team all Big 12 player. It's year three of his career. You start looking at year three of the kids who are in the 2021 class, the guys who might one day be all Americans, the majority of them are not going to make an impact on the field for a very long time. And that's the really tough part about what's happening right now is Herman has, I think, is having a hard time selling the championship pieces are already in place. Watch us do it. He still needs more pieces, and he's reached a point in his tenure where it's getting hard for him to get those pieces. And
that's why what you wrote in your column is, I think, is pretty relevant, though, Ketch. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, no, please do.
Because I thought what you wrote in your column on Sunday, you know, if you got clear, I don't have to tell you the name of Ketch's column. You know, you pointed out that, you know, because basically, if Tom Herman can run the table, okay, get to the Big 12 championship, you talked about, look, what the Sugar Bowl victory did from a recruiting impact, right? It did have a positive impact, and they need another moment like that. If Tom Herman's staying, right? Let's start with that caveat, right?
But then they would need to hold it, which is not what he did when he won those. That was the damning thing that happened after the Sugar Bowl, is they took all the momentum. They actually went on a historical run of success, and then they lost four conference games, had to fire seven coaches, and it disappeared in over the course of the month of last September. It just completely dried up and went away, and he's never got it back.
Correct. And he, I would just say to really, really boost recruiting. And because, you know, you said something in your column, and I did an eye roll, but you didn't do it on purpose. You said something factual when you started talking about the talent available in the 2022 class. And I was like, oh shit, here we go again. Like, this just kicking this little recruiting can down the road. But you weren't, that's not how you set it up. It was, I, you know, went in a different direction with it. But there is talent, and you could, that's obviously, I mean, it's talent every year, right? But realistically, it's beating Kansas. It's beating Iowa State. It's beating Kansas State. And then it's getting into that Big 12 championship game on December the 19th. And I mean, really winning it. I mean, really, not being a runner-up again. I mean, it has to be Sam Ellinger's defining moment as a UT quarterback, which is to win that game. Because from a bowl game perspective, who knows what's going to happen? I don't know what the hell this world looks like in January. Maybe it looks great, maybe it doesn't. Who the hell knows? But if he's retained, and then maybe that's the whole thing. He's got to win. And what did you say, Ketch? The next five games, I think, is what you put in your column. The three regular season games, the Big 12 championship game, and the bowl game, right? That is probably the key to jump starting recruiting, right?
Yes.
Okay. Then at that point, no pressure, because at that point, Ketch, to win another five, and they've won three. And what is that? An eight game win streak?
Yes.
Yeah. So he's just gotta go on an 8-game win streak. And all is well as far as recruiting is concerned.
Yes, in theory. The thing is, again, if they go on an 8-game winning streak, I think recruiting turns around. I think suddenly kids that they were doing pretty damn good with in 2022 start nibbling on that hook. Again, the problem that Herman has, and the problem that Texas has to have, like the big boy conversation they have to have, is there's no Sam next year. Like, this was supposed to be the year before a potential dip. I mean, on paper, this team does not look better for certainty than it did this year. Whatever happens this year, it could potentially be better than what next year's rebuild with a new quarterback at the very least will whoever plays next year at quarterback will be completely inexperienced. And who knows? Maybe they hit the ground running like Colt McCoy and they never look back, or maybe they have some moments like Mr. Rattler at Oklahoma where you get benched in the middle of a game, except maybe you don't win that game that your quarterback gets benched in, which weirdly happened. They weirdly won that game. How did that happen? If I told you in August, oh yeah, man, Texas is going to play Oklahoma, and FYI, like, Oklahoma's going to be struggling so bad on offense early in that game, like, they're going to bench their quarterback.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my God, they won by like three touchdowns.
It's a defining moment of the Tom Herman era for reasons other than it eventually became. And nobody wants to say it out loud, but the eyes of Texas thing has been completely thrown on Herman's shoulders. If that doesn't happen, if the eyes of Texas thing never happens, Tom Herman's probably safe right now. The real reason why so many people are so over the moon mad at him are because of what happened at the end of the TCU game and the end of the Oklahoma game. Period. I mean, that's just naive and pretending to say otherwise. Because, you know, it's part of what I wrote today on War was like, yo, if I told you before the season that Texas would go 8-2 in the regular season and play in the Big 12 championship game, and I didn't tell you how that game went, I just said, 8-2 playing in the big game at the end of the year, will you take it? I feel like everybody would snap my hand off to yes. And if you didn't, it feels really naive for a school that never competes. Texas has competed in three Big 12 championship games ever. Well, no, four ever. 96, 99, 05, 09. Well, five. So I guess, and then the most recent one in 18. So five times ever, ever. Out of 20-something years, so like once out of every 5 years, Texas plays in a Big 12 championship game. They haven't done it in 12 years. If I had offered you, hey, they're going to be there with a chance to win it before the season started, that feels like that would have represented improvement and success. They might still do that, and yet midway through, Texas fans have decided that's not good enough. You know, that's the irony of that is part of what I wrote about today. It is what it is. Like there's some woulda, coulda, shouldas in this that will make for interesting podcasts on War in the off season. But right here and now in this moment, I don't know what the end game is for Tom Herman. I don't know how he achieves it, because even if they get recruiting momentum going again with an 8-game winning streak, of which they would still need to win 5 of them. Jesus, yeah. Saying it out loud is crazy.
Well, that's why I said 8. I'm like, I said it like, you know, I hope you were getting the tone. I'm like, oh.
Oh, absolutely. But like, just me saying, it's one thing to hear someone else say it on War, and it's another thing for the words to come out of your own mouth. Once you're like 8 and 5 more, and God, that's a lot. Like, I'm literally thinking they might lose this weekend in Lawrence. And we're like, if they win 8... but even if they do that, Herman's in a spot now where, just like John McAvick was in 1997, John McAvick won outright conference championships in 95 and 96, and it took two games into 97 for him to lose his job. Like, Tom Herman doesn't have that, but it gives you an idea of like how quickly once upon a time, John McAvick thought he had job security, and then he didn't, and then he was fired in the blink of an eye, and he probably wondered where it all went. I'm saying kind of the same thing about Tom Herman, that a year from now, he could have a Big 12 championship under his belt, and if they drop down to, let's say, a 7-5, 8-4 type team next year because they're breaking in a young quarterback, he'll lose his job. And we'll be having this conversation about all the negative things that are being said online and how they're impacting recruiting. That's what coaches who get fired say about recruiting when they're asked about it. Oh, we can't recruit because of negativity. Well, there's only negativity because you can't win any games consistently. It's that simple. It's that simple. So, Tom, win all your games and go 8 and win the hell out. And like, you will make a lot of very difficult. You'll put some pressure on a lot of people. But if you lose again, like everybody expects you to, like, the body of your work is such that the conditions that you're in can't be survived. I mean, I don't know how. They can't keep doing this. Onward, you ever had a friend who's constantly telling you that they need to get a divorce? Oh, God, my wife and I make each other's lives miserable. And they just say it over and over and over again. It's like, yo, homie, like, just FYI, if we have to have the conversation about you potentially needing a divorce a dozen times, your ass needs a divorce. And it's no different with coaching job security in college athletics.
Yeah. I mean, no, you're right. Here's the question. I've been curious about this sketch, and there were people, and I alluded to this in my column, but there were people, and it was a small minority of people, but you've heard people who will try to tell you that Charlie Strong didn't get a fair shake here at Texas. They will tell you that. My rebuttal for that is always, okay, he lost to Kansas. Like, we got to stop the conversation, right? We can't pursue this. But there's a contingent of people out there, small as it may be, who feel like, man, like, there was something wrong. You had the cesspool comments. What happens, Ketch, if Tom goes 8-2, gets to the Big 12 championship game, right? And he gets there from an optic standpoint. I'm going to ask you a question. From an optic standpoint, if a guy inherits a program that was 5-7 in back-to-back years, and while the program hasn't gone to the Big 12 championship level, but it's better, more competitive, whatever the case may be, you fire a guy that would win, technically has won 3 straight bowl games, who potentially wins 7 or 8 games in eight or so games, potentially in a panic. Like, I'm very confident and feel like Texas will at very least be 7-3 at the end of the season. Like, at the very least, potentially 8-2. If he goes 8-2 and gets to the conference championship game, do optics matter, or will the only thing people care about is we got Urban and that's all? We don't give a shit, because you would have to tell me, how many guys would get fired by winning 70 or 80% of their games after winning 3 straight bowl games. I feel like it would be pretty unprecedented, but I might be wrong. I'm just kind of curious, from your standpoint, do optics even matter at this point, or is it literally saying this is about making up for not getting Nick Saban several years ago, and they just want to make sure this is the last opportunity at a redo?
You know, Russell Wilson was married before he's currently married. And I feel like when people talk about Russell Wilson's current marriage, they remember once upon a time that Russell Wilson was married with a girl, and like, she'd been with him through college and all that stuff. And then he got super famous and then just married like a world famous woman. Right.
Sierra,
and like
Sierra.
Yeah. For those that don't know. And at the end of the day, all that matters is the only thing people remember is that Russell Wilson's married to Sierra. Right. I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff in that dynamic and who she dated. And there's, at the end of the day, Russell Wilson is married to Sierra, and like, nothing else matters. And I kind of feel like I feel like a lot would be written. I feel like there'd be some people clutching their pearls. I feel like, oh my God, this is another example of college football being out of control. And there'd be like a week of that. If 2020 has taught us anything, we barely can stay focused on COVID for a week. So my answer to that would be yes, it would be unprecedented. But in 2020, the rules aren't the same as they used to be. And if they hired Urban Meyer, it would be like marrying Ciara. It wouldn't matter. You married her, and it was a means to an end. And I think that would be the case if you, but That's easier said than done. They have not done that yet. And I honestly don't know what the answer is if it's not Urban Meyer. That is another elephant in the room, is that Texas is going to have to be more of a big boy program than it's ever been in its history on war to pull that off. Because, you know, as I said in my podcast that I released earlier today over on the Yak Network, check it out. You ain't getting Urban Meyer ain't coming here on layaway. Urban Meyer is not looking at what Dabo Sweeney's done in terms of annual income. He's not looking at what Nick Saban's getting. He's not looking at the desperation of the University of Texas. He's not looking at all the leverage that he has. He's not looking at his medical situation, which is complicated. He's not looking at all those things combined and thinking to himself, you know, I want to coach at Texas so bad. I'm going to go there on the cheap and like work on a bonus structure just for them.
Nah. That is not how that works at all.
Can you imagine?
No. 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 You can't. Kick rocks.
So it's one thing to be like, it's one thing to say you're going to make a run, approach him, target him. There is a level of big boy behavior that it will take to make that happen. And it's probably $50 million over 5 years, not including bonuses. I had someone tell me, oh, there will be like easy to achieve bonuses. And as I said earlier today, if you're Urban Meyer, you're like, well, if they're easy to achieve, you just guarantee that money and put it in my deal.
Facts.
And then let's talk about some bonuses.
People who don't understand this and catch you'll know this because you've heard of things in the college football circle and I've heard things. Urban Meyer is nobody's punk.
No. Like,
if Urban Meyer is hired, Chris DelConte is not his boss.
Oh, no.
Urban Meyer is the boss.
Yes.
Okay. And Chris DelConte works for Urban at that freaking point. So, like, that dude is not that. That ain't the dude that you think you're gonna punk that guy. That guy is going to say, this is what I'm doing. Take it or leave it. You want these W's or not? Period.
I mean, you know, honestly, Del Conte's made enough mistakes that if Urban came in by year one, in theory, he could have enough juice to bump Del Conte out. Like, the thing that would make Del Conte's job security most shaky is if he ever found himself on the other side of a head coach's power. Mm-hmm. Because he got his job in part because people thought, oh, well, he and Herman already have a relationship, and Herman is really important. Herman's the most important guy on campus. We do need to have an AD that jives with Herman. And now that's not Herman would say it's the case. And now we've reported with unnamed sources that it's not as squeaky clean as that. But in the future, like if, let's say Urban Meyer were hired and after a year, he just didn't like Chris Del Conte, that'd be a problem for him.
Oh, it'd be a real problem.
Like when you say Del Conte would work for Urban Meyer, he would spend the next 12 months trying to prove, just like John Bianco, just like everybody in that department. You know what I mean? Like if you keep your job, you got to prove that you should then retain your job after 12 months. Everybody, when a new guy comes in, has to prove that. If you hire somebody like that, I mean, there's two types of hires you make if you're Chris Del Conte, the type of guy that you can boss around and the type of guy that you can't boss around. And I'm just Urban Meyer ain't the type of guy that has bosses.
No, he ain't about that smoke. You think that, dude, if you think you're going to tell him what to do, that is not going to happen. You could throw things at him and see how he responds. But Urban's all alpha. And here's the thing that Urban has that will make everybody shut up and fall in line. He's got the skins on the wall.
Yeah, man.
I mean, he's got the skins on the wall. He's a guy that, you know, you might be able to tell Tom Herman a few things here or there. He loses a couple of games and doesn't have a good season. Now, all of a sudden, you have the upper hand and the advantage in the conversation. And now, you know, all this, that with that dude? Oh, hell no. Good luck.
The thing is, Anwar, think about it. Like, if we include all of the sports, so college football, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, I don't care, all of them, anyone you can think of. How many coaches can we name that the moment you hire them, you've hired absolute guaranteed elite level success?
At the University of Texas?
No, in general, amongst all sports. General. Because what I would argue is there ain't no coach in the NBA that can guarantee that. You got to have players. Pop might be the best coach of all time. You take away his Hall of Fame players, the Spurs ain't nobody.
Dabo Sweeney, Urban Meyer.
And Saban.
Saban, yeah. Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, Urban Meyer.
And that, then is there anybody in the NFL?
No, because the NFL is different than college. Because you have to have the recruiting aspect. And there isn't a guy, first of all, that would, you know, how many would leave? So of what's available, then how many would you say is, I mean, like, you know, realistic, like Bill Belichick's not freaking leaving New England, right? So,
but if you hired Bill Belichick, you'd feel like you'd be in a Super Bowl within 5 years?
Shit, not that long. Well, I don't know. New England's a little bit different now without Brady, so maybe that's not the best one. But Pete Carroll, for sure, I would probably say.
I mean, there's a handful of guys. If you hired Pete Carroll as your coach, like if he came to the Cowboys, forget about Jerry for a second. But like in general, if you made that, if Pete Carroll went to the Steelers, Tomlin got bumped out, and they replaced him with Pete Carroll, you'd be like, oh, the Steelers would be legit, right? Like there's only a handful of guys, and I don't know that they exist in other sports. Like that's why I say the value of a guy like Urban Meyer, it's almost can't be quantified because there's so few of him across all sports that he and Saban and Dabo are unicorns. They can recycle. It doesn't matter. Give him a brand new group of guys. They can rotate players. It doesn't matter. Saban can lose Tua and he's still undefeated. You know what I mean? That doesn't happen everywhere. And when you watch guys like Harbaugh or David Shaw or Franklin at Penn State this year, who have various levels of highs, and then there's a catastrophic fall because they're mortals. Like the thing about Urban is he ain't mortal. And I may not like him as a human being based on the things that I've seen him do as a human being, but he is legitimately maybe the greatest college football coach that ever lived. And the only guy that can be in the discussion with him is Nick Saban. And you can make a case that what Urban Meyer did at Utah is significantly more impressive than what Nick Saban did at Michigan State. They've both won national championships at multiple schools. Like we're at really rarefied air. And, you know, I just, no offense, Urban's just different.
Can I give you a stat catch?
Yeah.
Urban Meyer's record as a college football coach in 17 years, okay, 187 wins, 32 losses. Since 2014, Texas has compiled 38 losses. In Urban's 17-year career, he has never lost as many games as Texas has over the last seven.
God, it's crazy.
Just meditate on that for a second.
Hey, Anwar, we got to wrap this up.
Okay.
From a parting shots, what else is in your brain? Because I got a kid that I got to go put on Zoom here in a second. So
okay, you got work.
I do. I just it's almost 2 o'clock, and my just full transparency, Hendrix is with my wife at an eye doctor's appointment. Mm-hmm. So my only job is to make sure my daughter is on Zoom.
Okay, fair enough. I will just, I'll close and say this. I will just, this is just what I've been using for the past couple of weeks for my predictions. And I'm just going to use this as my parting shot. It is 2020. And so the moment you feel like you have 2020 boxed in and figured out, it just wreaks havoc on your plans. The moment you feel like, oh, I'll know what the election results are, it's 2 weeks later, we don't know who our president is, right? So I will say that you might have it thought out that, okay, if A happens and this happens, then, you know, this is what's going to happen as relates to Tom Herman. I'm just going to remind you, it's freaking 2020. We laugh at the notion of 8 wins. If I told you, yes, in 2019, yeah, it seems impossible. If I said, catch 8 wins, and you're like, crazy. I'd like, hey, you know, it's 2020. You're like, ah, shit. You're right. Anything is possible. So that's my parting shot is, I'm not going to count any of these chickens before they're hatched. I'm not writing anyone's obituary. I'm not writing anyone's wedding announcement. I'm not writing anything, because the one thing I just know is that this year has taught me to predict the unpredictable. And all I'm going to do is cover these next few weeks and see what the hell happens. And that's just my parting shot.
For myself and Anwar Richardson and all of you over at orangefans.com who listen to the podcast, hey, check out Orange Bloods. If you like Orange Fans, I promise you're going to love Orange Bloods. Just ask Tom. For all of us, God, what a day. What a fun. I so enjoyed the last couple of hours. Now I had to go back to the real world and put my daughter on Zoom and mess it all up. Thank you for listening. We'll do this again next week. I bet it. Who knows? It's hard for me to believe next week's press conference will be better than this week's, but this was a fun one to overreact to. Later.